The nuns who live in the Abbey of St. Walburga in northern Colorado find their connection to God through prayer and cattle ranching. The small Benedictine community helps support itself through agricultural work, which also helps the nuns stay connected to the world in other ways. Luke Runyon from member station KUNC has the story.
About 5 miles south of the Colorado-Wyoming border, a large stone sign points visitors down a gravel driveway into a rocky valley. Idyllic red farm buildings are just down the road from the main abbey, where 22 sisters live, pray, and work.
Good morning!
Three nuns step out of a retro Ford truck, dressed in simple white veils. Oh, and jeans, plaid shirts, and Carhartt jackets.
Hi, no. Sister Walburga.
Hi. Maria Walburga. Nice to meet you, Luke.
Sister Walburga runs the Abbey's ranch, and the list of agricultural activities here is long. They raise llamas, chickens, water buffalo, and bees. But the biggest moneymaker on the farm comes from the beef cattle. The money from ground beef sales goes to the Abbey's coffers. And Walburga is very aware of her marketing edge. There's always a waiting list for new customers.
We have a bit of a corner in the market, you know, none selling natural beef. People kind of believe in it, you know.
To keep the baby cows safe from the region's numerous predators, like bears, coyotes, mountain lions, the nuns employ an unorthodox set of security guards.
The llamas do have a purpose, besides, baby calf protection. We have actually seen them chase a mountain lion off the property.
What?
Yeah. That's why we have them. Llamas have various weaponry. One of them is their breath. They also kill with their front feet. You know, they try to disembowel you.
That's right. A disemboweling guard llama raised by nuns.
All the cows are going to come, sister.
Here's Daisy taking the lead.
In the Middle Ages, when many religious orders were founded, agriculture was more than a way of life. It was a way of survival. Monks and nuns raised the food they ate. Since then, we've become a lot more urban. Still, Walburga says the Abbey's farm is more than just a quaint business. While some of the other nuns have questioned the ranch's value, she says it keeps the sisters connected to the outside world.
When our neighbors are suffering from drought or suffering from flooding, we can totally relate to them. We're not above and beyond. And it's good to be at the mercy of the environment. And so other people know, you know, that we don't live some kind of ethereal life.
Most Benedictine monasteries use the motto ora et labora, meaning pray and work. But Walburga says there's no division between those two ideas. Prayer and work are intertwined. With farm work done for the morning, it's time for prayer. Back down at the main abbey, Walburga is in her traditional black and white habit.
Praying with the scriptures is like chewing your cud. All through the day, we're ruminating on it. So we chew, 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 swallow, regurgitate, chew, chew, chew.
After prayers and a quick lunch, the sisters will be back to work in their Carhartt jackets.
So it's not just the Lord is my shepherd, it's the Lord is my cowboy.
And this afternoon's chore is to round up some rogue llamas. For NPR News, I'm Luke Runyon in Fort Collins, Colorado.
Luke's story came to us from Harvest Public Media, a reporting collaboration focusing on agriculture and food production. In Havana this week, two religious communities are celebrating the holiday season, but they are reacting differently to news of warming relations between the United States and Cuba. Cuba's tiny Jewish community has embraced the news, especially with the release of contractor Alan Gross. But as NPR's Carrie Kahn reports, some Catholic worshippers are upset with President Obama's overtures to Cuba's communist government.
Feliz Hanukkah.
Their numbers may be small, but for members of Temple Beth Shalom in Havana, size doesn't matter. On Sunday night, a couple hundred people filled the temple sanctuary to light 6 Hanukkah candles, watch teens put on a play, and clap to a group of toddlers dancing to the holiday classic 8 Little Candles, sung in Ladino. Temple members say they're thrilled that both Presidents Obama and Castro agreed to warm relations between the two countries. And, says David Prinstein Senjordins, the temple's vice president, the release of Alan Gross adds to the holiday's celebration. Gross was sentenced to 15 years in prison for bringing in banned satellite and internet equipment. Access to the internet is closely controlled on the island.
Y creo que Hanukkah hizo un milagro, una vez más.
It seems as if there was another Hanukkah miracle, says Prinstein, who visited Gross many times during his 5 years locked up in a Cuban military hospital. Adela Dworin, president of the temple, says the Jewish community was never involved in importing sophisticated equipment.
Sería tonto para una comunidad tan pequeña.
It would have been stupid for such a small group to take part in illegal acts, she says. Dworin says she and the community helped Gross because he was a fellow Jew. She points to the few antiquated computer terminals in the temple's library where we're talking.
No hacía falta, realmente no hacía falta.
We don't need it. In reality, we have all we need, says Dworin. We can get on the internet here. It's slow, she adds, but we get by with what we have. While the Jews celebrated the news of improved relations between the U.S. and Cuba, across town earlier in the day, the mood was much different outside St. Rita's Catholic Church. That's where the strident dissident group Women in White meet every Sunday after morning mass. La Sra. Barbara Cedinha Recalde says the group feels betrayed by President Barack Obama. She says by warming relations with Raul Castro, Obama gave the repressive regime much-needed oxygen.
Fortalecer el grupo represivo en contra de nosotros.
It just strengthens the regime so they can repress us more, she says. After mass, the group of 70 women all dressed in white and carrying a plastic pink gladiola walked silently down a main thoroughfare of Havana. At the end, they stood in front of the large white church and chanted,
Libertad! Libertad! Libertad!
Freedom! Freedom, they called out. They say no changes will come to Cuba as long as Raul Castro is in power, and they say he can't be trusted. According to the White House, Castro was to release 53 political prisoners from Cuban jails. The women and other human rights activists say none have been released so far. Carrie Kahn, NPR News, Havana.
Pope Francis played a big role behind the scenes, helping to thaw the relationship between the U.S. and Cuba. The Pope certainly showed he can hold sway on the global stage, but he has been making some big changes inside the Catholic Church as well. Since his election, Francis has appointed or promoted some 40 American bishops in places like Kansas, New York, and Miami. By far the most prominent is the new Archbishop of Chicago. American Catholics are just beginning to feel the impact of these choices, and as Monique Parsons reports, some are wondering where Francis is taking their church.
Mass is getting started at the Church of St. Mary in Lake Forest, Illinois, an active parish in a wealthy Chicago suburb. Every seat is taken. People stand in the aisles.
You were sent to heal the contrite of heart, Lord, have mercy.
They're here to see a soft-spoken man from Spokane, Washington. Blaise Cupich. He became the ninth Archbishop of Chicago in November, hand-picked by the Pope himself. His friendly homily did seem to have Francis's touch. He spoke about human suffering, the actor Paul Newman, and chocolate ice cream. Judging by the laughter and the collection basket, the new Archbishop was a hit. The parish donated more than $20,000 to his charity fund. His next stop was a few miles south, but a world away, lunch at a homeless shelter in Chicago.
He didn't ask to be designated as Francis's bishop or one of the poster children for what Pope Francis's hopes for the church of the future might look like, but he stuck with it.
That's Michael Buddy. He's chairman of Catholic Studies at Chicago's DePaul University. He says the Chicago Archbishop oversees a microcosm of the global church and a big bureaucracy.
In a way, it's kind of like being the assistant manager at Walmart. You have all the responsibility, but none of the capacity to really do anything.
The church isn't as influential as it once was, Buddy says, and Catholic institutions are either shrinking or blending in with the broader secular culture. Still, many are watching carefully. Marianne Hackett is the president of Catholic Citizens of Illinois, a conservative group. She's already troubled by vaguely welcoming remarks Cupich made about pro-choice politicians. She's got her eye on Francis, too.
He spoke about people being obsessed with abortion and homosexuality. And that was really very distressing to people who have been active, like, for 40 years in the pro-life movement.
Hackett says she and her peers are unnerved when the Pope says things that emphasize a new approach, wondering if divorced Catholics could become godparents, say, or asking who am I to judge when discussing gay priests.
That causes a lot of confusion in the church. You know, people are distressed about what he's saying. He's beloved. He's certainly a nice person, open. I just think it would be helpful if he were more precise.
But many Catholics say Francis knows exactly what he's doing. His informal remarks are just vague enough that people see him as a kind of Rorschach test. Where some project fears, others see hope.
Pope Francis is definitely a different pope. He's more in tune with the normal people.
Michael Verns is a Sunday school teacher at St. Anne's Parish in California's Oakland Diocese.
Right now, it's a majority of Filipino immigrants.
But with a large Mexican community as well. Verns holds a foot-long baby Jesus carved from gleaming honey-colored olive wood, part of his parish's entry in Oakland's annual Crush Festival. Half the Catholics here are either Asian or Latino, making it one of the most diverse dioceses in America.
Doesn't matter if you're gay or straight, he welcomes everybody. So that's something new. And the church always needs something new, you know, because God welcomes everybody. We don't push away anybody.
Some see a very personal impact, like Beth Florendo, who's helping Vern set up the creche.
When we had a strict pope, a lot of the younger ones were kind of like walking away from faith. Now it's like coming back, which to me is great, definitely.
Polls aren't showing a surge in attendance, but Florendo says her adult children are coming to church again. She hopes that Francis and his bishops can convince them to stay. For NPR News, I'm Monique Parsons.
This is sound from St. Peter's Basilica in Rome, where Pope Francis led Mass for thousands of Catholics last night.
Il popolo che camminava nelle tenebre ha visto una grande luce.
The Pope's message was solemn but encouraging. He urged Catholics to let God help them overcome darkness and corruption. This came on the heels of a speech last week where he criticized the Vatican bureaucracy for what he called a catalog of illnesses. And many people like what they're hearing. A world survey conducted by Pew found an overwhelmingly favorable view of Pope Francis. NPR's Sylvia Pagioli profiles a man who in the last 21 months has emerged as a leader on the global stage and whose appeal reaches beyond just Catholics.
Hours before the U.S.-Cuba diplomatic breakthrough was announced, Pope Francis stood on his Popemobile, kissing babies and greeting crowds in St. Peter's Square for his weekly audience. It was also his 78th birthday. Hundreds of couples came to perform the tango to celebrate an Argentine once very adept on the dance floor. A more austere Francis appeared last month at the European Parliament. The first pope from outside the West bluntly told European leaders their continent is weary and becoming irrelevant.
Di un'Europa nonna e non più fertile e vivace.
A grandmother Europe, no longer fertile and vibrant. As a result, the great ideas that once inspired Europe seem to have lost their attraction, only to be replaced by the bureaucratic technicalities of its institutions.
Francis is a master at blending the spiritual with the political. He has overhauled the Vatican's finances, long tainted by suspicion of money laundering. He picked two clerical sex abuse survivors to join his new commission on protection of minors. And he appointed a council of nine cardinals to assist him in reforming the dysfunctional Vatican bureaucracy. At the recent Bishops' Assembly on the Family, Francis broke new ground, encouraging free speech and exchange of ideas. Veteran Vatican analyst Marco Politi says Francis wants to reshape the church for the contemporary world, abolishing its imperial nature.
Where the Pope is half emperor and half God, he wants the Pope as Bishop of Rome. He wants the church led not by an absolute monarch, but by the Pope, in collegiality, where the bishops are called to be part of the decision-taking process.
Vatican watchers say Francis does not intend to alter doctrine. But unlike his two predecessors, he does not use the expression non-negotiable values. The prevailing concept now is mercy. Argentine journalist Elisabetta Piquet has known the former Archbishop of Buenos Aires, Jorge Bergoglio, for more than a decade. What most distinguishes him from his predecessor, she says, was his proximity to his flock in the shanty towns of a large metropolis.
13 million people with a terrible
differences and gap between very rich people and what he calls the excluded ones from a country, Argentina, very rich, but with a lot of problems because of corruption, mismanagement.
In the U.S., which Francis visits in September, the Pew survey shows he has a 78% favorability rating. But John Allen, the veteran Vatican analyst for the Boston Globe, says the first pope from the global south has irritated some conservative Americans by criticizing laissez-faire capitalism and the ills of globalization.
In his bones, the defense of immigrants is a hugely important issue. Well, immigration is, of course, a very divisive political question in the United States. He is deeply suspicious of free market global capitalism. We are the mothership of free market global capitalism. And so there's some resistance there.
There is also resistance within the Catholic Church. Vatican analyst Marco Politi fears what he calls the strategy of the swamp.
A lot of people within the church let him speak, applaud, and do nothing.
A pope alone, says Politi, cannot change an institution with 1.2 billion members.
For a pope to change the church, you need an engaged laity, you need engaged theologians, really engaged pro-reform bishops.
One of those is Archbishop Bruno Forte, author of the controversial section in the recent synod's draft report that welcomed gays, conciliatory language rejected by traditionalists in the final report.
If you decide to be transparent and to accept that diversity of opinions may have a room in the church, it is normal that there are also people who don't agree completely with you.
It's said that behind Vatican walls, a whispering campaign is trying to undermine the Pope's authority. But beyond the Catholic fold, Francis's humble streak and merciful tone have made him one of the world's most popular newsmakers. He was on the cover of Rolling Stone under the headline, "The Times, They Are A-Changing," and Fortune magazine declared him the most influential person in the world. Argentine journalist Elisabetta Piquet says Francis tackles everyday problems.
Human trafficking, the poverty, migration, all these people escaping for wars, all the big problems that our leaders have failed to address. And that is why he has become really a leader, a moral international leader.
Francis is the first Jesuit pope. Over the centuries, that religious order often waged its own diplomacy, acquiring extensive knowledge of other cultures. The training shows. On Syria, Francis was closer to Russia and China than to Western powers. He hosted a prayer summit with the Israeli and Palestinian leaders. And as the first Latin American pope, he had street cred in Havana. The pope, who described himself coming from the other end of the earth, has embraced the bully pulpit of the papacy, emerging as a daring, independent broker on the global stage. Silvia Poggioli, NPR News, Rome.